Everybody, welcome to Out the First. It's January 30th, 2024. I'm Ryan Ballingy. Thanks for being here. We've got a couple things to talk about. We did get some official news around LIV Golf today. We'll talk about that. Some fun, some serious. before we get to all that, we're presented by friends at Swannies. Check them out, swannies.co. Use the promo code GolfNewsNet25 and save 25% off your first order. They have great stuff this time of year where it's a little bit cooler, and for the springtime when it's starting to get a little bit warmer. Quarter zips, hoodies. Quarter zips with a hood on top, lots of different textures and materials, patterns, solid colors, multiple color blocks, you name it, they've got it at Swannies, swannies.co. All right, so as had been suspected, we got the announcement of Tyrrell Hatton going to LIV. So that kind of started to come out yesterday, even though I feel like that's been out there for more than a week at this point. I thought it was out there before I went to the PGA show. And I may be wrong about that, but I was pretty sure that had been out there at that point. And so they've set up their rosters for the year. They've set up their players for the year. So Tyrrell Hatton's in. And going along with that announcement, they have announced John Rahm's team name, which is going to be Legion 13. We talked about that, I think, before. And that's been out there for a little while. The LIV accounts, the Pro LIV accounts, have been tweeting about that. That they kind of gotten the word about the team name, but they also did a kind of brand reveal of the logo today and the players on the team. Caleb Surratt, who's apparently signed with LIV, was a great amateur player, went to Texas, if I remember right. He's now signed with LIV. And then Kieran Vincent, who is Scott Vincent's brother. Scott Vincent's played on LIV. He's actually had some pretty good results on LIV. He's been a guy that's kind of been one of those players that you expected to just not be good at all on LIV and turned out to actually play pretty well in the circuit. But his brother qualified through their Q school. So he is on John Rahm's team. So that's therefore. So on one hand, you've got an up-and-coming college player. You got a guy who, not heralded, but he's not terrible. He's just not heralded. And then you've got guys in Tyrrell Hatton and John Rahm. So now we know what it looks like for the teams for this year. And the interesting thing to me is that the logo for the Legion 13 team immediately reminded me of the Thundercats logo. Now, I am dating myself a little bit, so if you're a young person, just stop listening to this. Look up Thundercats, listen to the Thundercats logo or theme song. You will understand. I think you will understand. And I watched the little video. I was like, all right, well, let's see who's going to be on the team. I figure it's Hatton. And here you are. The logo pulls up, and it was like an AI-generated video. And it almost kind of reminded me of some of the Callaway commercials around the, not the AI smoke, but the Paradigm. And the logo flies in, and like there's like rocks and rock sounds and ground crumbling sounds, and then you get to the logo. It's like Thundercats, there it is. So maybe John Rahm's a big Thundercats guy. I don't know. Maybe it's just a total coincidence, also completely possible. I saw Eric Patterson, who has worked for The Score forever, great guy, great golf guy, good follow, EPAT Golf on X or Twitter. He said he thought about the Mortal Kombat logo, which I also thought about, because when the way that the logo flew in, and there are only so many ways you can fly in a logo into a video, right? But the way the logo flew in reminded me of the opening sequence of like Mortal Kombat games. He was totally right. And part of me wanted to yell like, Mortal Kombat, in my empty living room this morning as I was watching that. And I figured delaying doing this podcast until around noon was, I just kind of figured, I don't know, have a sense about these things, about when stuff's going to happen. And LIV had put out the feeler, I don't know, last night, 6, 7, 8 o'clock, that they were going to put this information out there today. And they've done that. So now 3 days before their first tournament, they've got their lineup. And hey, good news for Hayden Buckley. You are now in a signature event because you're filling the field with Tyrrell Hatton's place. So there's that for Hayden Buckley. Hayden Buckley has not played well recently. I want to get back to that in a second or in another episode. Maybe we go down this rabbit hole someday, but the way the PGA Tour does its alternate lists needs to change desperately. Hayden Buckley has not played well lately, and there are other players who have been playing well lately. I feel like the alternate list on the PGA Tour should emphasize current play, current form, not long-term form, not long-term status, not past champion status. Forget all of that. It should start and end with the next best available players off of the FedEx Cup points list or something like that, some kind of metric like that. One, makes the FedEx Cup more valuable, the points more valuable. Two, if you're going to have events like this, and you're really not going to have alternates otherwise, because this is special because they have a pro-am component, and they have to have 80 professionals. But if you're going to do alternate lists like this in the future for full field events, you just have to do it based on current performance. It will make it better. Leave exemptions, leave sponsor exemptions for your up-and-comers and those types of things. That's totally fine. Your past champions, all that stuff. That's what sponsor exemptions are for. They need to change that. And I will stand on that soapbox for a long time. That might be my soapbox of the year this year. So there's that. So they've announced their league. They've announced their players. There had been this thought out there that there would be two wild card players per event. And I don't get the sense in reading this that that is the case, because I've looked at both the LIV Golf site and their media site, and the format is supposed to be 13 teams and 52 players. They have not said there would be 54 players. Now, that can change, of course. They can change their mind at any time. I mean, this tour has not been around all that long. They could change the format at any minute, and they, by the way, under their contracts, have total discretion to do that, so they can change their mind. But this is what it seems like it's going to be. You're going to have 52 players, but again, they can announce those additional players, I guess, at any time. So you got all that, and you've got this competition now straight up against the signature event at Pebble, where you've got 43 of the world top 50 competing in the official world golf ranking. And obviously you've got pretty much all, but not all, of last season's FedEx Cup top 50 competing. Obviously the OWGR is a little bit different now in terms of how it weights things, because it doesn't get points. So you've still got LIV players in the top 50 in the world, because you've got Rahman Hatton, they just came over. You've got Cam Smith still in there. You've got Brooks Koepka still in there. Otherwise, if you're a LIV player, you're pretty much SOL out of this list. And I'm just making sure going down the list that I'm not missing anybody here in the top 50. If I did not see anything about Maronk, by the way, but I assume he's out the door. In that case, you know, then you get another guy at number 42 in the world. But beyond that, you know, that's kind of the end of it. Obviously, everyone else is kind of falling out. And you can make your argument if you're LIV, that doesn't really matter, and it probably doesn't. But you've got, obviously, a good number of current major champions. Not a ton, and you still got a lot of dead weight down at the bottom, but you have a better roster than you did last year. That's for certain. What that means incrementally, I don't know. Does this mean anything to the negotiation? I don't know. I don't think Tyrrell Hatton means a darn thing to the negotiation. And I don't think he really means a whole lot to people who might watch LIV. If John Rahm doesn't mean anything, and I don't know that he does or doesn't, I'm just postulating. If John Rahm doesn't mean anything, then Tyrrell Hatton definitely means nothing. If John Rahm means something, and I guess we'll kind of find that out this weekend, then Tyrrell Hatton may mean a smidgen, but probably nothing toward the number of people that are viewing this thing. Certainly in this country. Certainly in the United States. Elsewhere, that could have some resonance, right? Being a European Ryder Cup player, being a big important part of the European Tour, DP World Tour times over the last 5-6 years. You know, maybe he does bring in some people to view it. I don't know. But that's what they've got. That's what they're rolling with for this year. And they start on Friday. All right, well, here we go. Again, you kind of go through these things with LIV, especially now that they do this season thing, right? Where they're not having players come in and out. They're going to have players commit to all of the events and play on a team and all that stuff. And by doing that, you're fundamentally kind of handcuffed, right? You can only have one big splash day. Well, they had two. because of December 6th with Rahm and with Tyrrell Hatton and Adrian Meronk to a degree. But those guys are more named players. No offense to Meronk, incredible player. So this is your splash day. And you go, okay, well, you got three guys from Europe. You got the reigning Masters champion. You've got a Ryder Cup stalwart. What does that mean for the league? What does that mean for negotiation? And I think you have to think about those things differently. Because I'm pretty certain the way that this went down in terms of back deal negotiation, upper ever-increasing offers to try to lock this thing down, I don't think LIV was completely prepared for what they were going to have to do this year in terms of actually operating the full league. My guess is they assumed that they would have figured this out sometime, the deal, sometime in 2023, and then whatever was going to come along for this season would more or less have been what they did last season. Same players, more or less, and just assume that everything would be in upheaval the following year. Not necessarily in terms of the form of some facets of it, like team ownership or those types of things, but that if they came to an agreement with the PGA Tour and the DP World Tour, that a lot of the bottom-feeding players would be just summarily tossed, and you would replace them with better players, you would have fewer events, you'd spread that out over a different period of time, kind of the stuff that's been put out there by the people on the PGA Tour side of what to do with LIV. I think there was an assumption that was going to kind of happen. And then when it became evident the deal was not going to happen before December 31st and that it was going to negotiations being extended, they were going to have to do something different. That triggered Jon Rahm to try to get everyone to the table. Rahm probably assumed he was only going to do this 1 year. And then they realized, oh, wait, it's not going to happen. So now we've got to get someone else to fill up this team. So here's Tyrrell Hatton. Okay, well, that's what we got. Don't know what that means. I don't think really Hatton doesn't mean much. I think we'll see what happens. The ratings this weekend, if the ratings stink and no one watches it, or at least relatively few people watch it, or it's a minor increase or, you know, something like that, could be a decrease, I doubt that, but minor increase, then PGA Tour can go back to Strategic Sports Group and go, well, do we really need these guys? And then they can make some choices based on that. And I'm not saying one way or the other whether that's the right call. I'm just saying they could have that discussion. So all that is kind of the intrigue that comes out of those announcements. But I really want to harp on the Thundercats part because that was pretty cool. That was not a knock on Rahm or LIV there. I love the Thundercats. Thundercats logo rocks. Okay. Do want to get to something, though, that I did not talk about yesterday relating to all of this. And that is the proposed LPGA-LET merger. Now, I don't know if you knew this was a thing. This was a thing that came to a head last November, okay? So, in last November, there was supposed to be a vote of the LET's membership, Ladies European Tour membership, to formally merge with the LPGA. And they would form one organization. They'd have three tours under that umbrella, the LPGA, Epson Tour, and the LET. And the LET players wanted to vote for this from everything I've heard. And they wanted to do that in part because it would offer them, at least perception-wise, greater financial security. Because the LPGA is in a healthier state. They have done a tremendous job building the Epson Tour up from purses where they used to be $150,000 10, 15 years ago to now close to double that. They've been growing. And the LPGA have been instrumental in keeping the LET alive thanks to a partnership from a couple of years ago where the LPGA more or less said, look, we'll help keep you afloat and with the intent to bring you under our umbrella. Kind of like what the PGA Tour did with European Tour Productions where they took a 40% stake and were like, just so you guys know, you know, we're kind of coming for the rest someday. But for now, we will fund you through this. Instead of directly injecting cash into the tour, we will give you money for European Tour Productions. Okay? So they're supposed to have this vote, and then the vote gets tabled the last minute. Like, very last minute. And that was kind of the end of it. The LET put out a statement, the LPGA put out a statement, and more or less kind of said, you know, hopefully we'll work this out eventually type of deal. Well, it comes out last week, so this is another PGA show thing that I didn't get to, from the Telegraph that the reason that vote was squadoosh was because of Gulf Saudi and Yasser al-Rumayyan. And what happened is the Saudis, who through Aramco run a series of events, they run the Ladies Saudi Ladies International, which is a $5 million event to open their year. It's their biggest purse by far out of an event that's not co-sanctioned. And they run what's called the Aramco Team Series. I think it's four or five of them. I don't remember exactly at the moment. But they are $1 million purses that I think there's four of them. And there's a $1 million team purse and there is a $1 million individual purse, if I remember right. There's four of them. And often they will invite some LPGA players who are willing to take an appearance fee to come play in the event. And that total contribution to the LET schedule, total purse, is $13 million. Gulf Saudi said, you go through this thing with the LPGA, we're going to pull our investment. We will not give you that $13 million in purse money. And you'll be SOL. And the LET took this information to their players and said, look, if we do this with the LPGA, that money's out the door. It's gone. And that led to the tabling of the vote. I don't see any reason to have done this from an outside perspective other than that they could. And that's something they want to get back to later, whether they want to exert more control over the Ladies European Tour as a way of exerting control over women's professional golf. I don't know. I don't know the aim. I don't know the point. But it really seems like it's more they did it because they could. Because the LPGA, at least publicly, has said they would at least have a conversation with the Saudis if they were interested in investing in the LPGA or women's golf in some fashion. But also, at the same time, the LPGA has a marketing agreement with Fenway Sports Group. And what does Fenway Sports Group have coming up? Well, that's an enormous investment in the PGA Tour. So the Saudis probably took that all and said, ha, wait a second. We have a chess move to make here in the bigger negotiation. We can kind of stick it to the LPGA and thereby stick it to Fenway Sports Group by forcing them to table this vote until we get what we want in whatever this final agreement might be. And then maybe that vote goes through after all. So very strange situation there. It's one of those things where when I saw the vote come, I was like, what? What? I didn't understand. It didn't make sense to me because the LPGA, at least publicly, has not said, oh, well, we don't want Saudi involvement. They have reservations about it, but that they've been pretty neutral about it. So I don't know the full behind the scenes, but again, that's where it came from. That was kind of surprising to read. Kind of unfortunate to read, to be honest with you. I think in the long haul, combining the LET with the LPGA is pretty much a must-do. It's got to happen. It's really the only way that the LET can survive long haul, I think. And it needs to happen. So hopefully that all works out in the end. So all that as the update for today. One thing I did want to point out, and this is something I tweeted about or X'd about. I don't even know what you call it anymore. But if you do have a USGA Gin handicap, go in the Gin app today. They have like their version of Spotify Wrapped, which is called Gin Rewind. You get your graphic and it kind of tells you about your year, like where you started handicap-wise, how many rounds you posted, courses you played, low round, average score, all that stuff. I posted mine to my Twitter, my Instagram. It was a good year for golf for me. I didn't play nearly as often as I thought it. I played 22 rounds, which I feel like is low for me. I don't really keep track of that every year, but felt low for me. I play a lot of nine-hole golf, so maybe that's how it all kind of comes together. Days of golf versus rounds of golf combined is probably a little different, but great year of playing golf. And it's kind of fun to look back on your year, see some of your highlights, and share that. So tag me if you do that on Twitter or X or Instagram. I'm at Ryan Ballengee on both. Would love to see it. Hey, get a chance to kind of tell people about your year and talk about golf. That's a good thing for me. So I enjoy that. That's going to do it for us today on the show. Thanks for listening. Trying to keep it to a tight 20 today, so we got close to that. That's pretty good. You can get a hold of me, ryan@thegolfnewsnet.com. We'll be back tomorrow with another show. Well, I'm sure we'll talk about whatever John Rahm says in his news conference, because he does have one today, I believe. And I'm sure we'll hear a little bit more about Tyrrell Hatton's move and whether we hear the talking points. I mean, I'm fascinated to hear that, whether that happens out of Tyrrell Hatton's mouth or not, because that seemed like the kind of guy who's very good with the company line. But I guess we'll see how that all works out. All right, we'll talk to you tomorrow. Thanks so much for listening to Two Off the First.